It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Joe Michaud was only 17 years old when he signed up to serve with the Maine National Guard in Portland. That was the beginning of 7 years of service in the armed forces. It was peacetime service, but during a time when peace felt very fragile. Joe was stationed in Germany and tasked with patrolling the border between East and West during a time when there was a very real possibility of World War III breaking out at any moment. He's written about his experiences in his memoir, Along the Iron Curtain, and this Sunday, he'll be speaking at the German-American Heritage Center in Davenport at 2 p.m. as part of the center's exhibition, Berlin, Divided Past, United Future. And he's here with me now. Hello, Joe.
How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today. And when you signed up for the service, you were pretty short on options at that time. You were very young, 17 years old, and it was a time of peace. You had to get your mother's permission to sign up. Was that your argument that we're not at war, Mom? So
I joined the Maine National Guard, and I told her it's just like the Boy Scouts. You know, we go away to summer camp, and poor Mom. But you had to have, if you were 17, you had to have parental permission to join the military. That's how it all started, and then I did 6 months of training at Fort Dix, New Jersey. And I came home, and I guess I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but I had always had a fascination with the military, thanks to all the movies that Hollywood was cranking out, like Sands of Iwo Jima and things along that line. And so I had joined the regular army when I was 18, and they sent me to Germany.
When you went to Germany, what year was that?
That was, I went to Germany in February of 59. In those days, they didn't fly people. We went over on a troop ship. I was on the USS Patch. Some veterans will remember that.
When you got to Germany, describe the atmosphere. I mean, this was, of course, significantly post-World War II.
Right.
But there was still this divide that lasted for so many decades.
Oh, yeah. On the one hand, the Germans were, by and large, fairly tolerant of us. There were, of course, a lot of Germans that didn't like us. You know, they'd lost the war to us, and that didn't sit well with them. The border was a potential flashpoint. At any time, it was possible that something could happen. And the job of the regiment that I was in, the 14th Armored Cavalry, was to patrol that border and give early warning if we saw any signs that they were building up, you know, forces and weapons and stuff like that along the border.
Okay, so you were looking for Soviet buildup.
We were looking for, or Soviet bloc buildup, yeah. Could have been East German Army, could have been Russian, could have been either one. And there had been problems. For instance, Berlin was shut down, when was it, 56 maybe, or 53, somewhere in there. No, maybe not. I can't remember the date, but Berlin was shut down by the Eastern Bloc, and the airlift came out of that, and the Allies flew supplies, food, and coal and stuff into Berlin for almost a whole year before the Russians finally relented and realized that if they pushed us any further, there would be a war. There was just no way around it. When I was there, there was an alert in 1959. There was a Berlin crisis in 1959 in May, and our units were sent up onto the border a few kilometers back from the border, and we were issued live ammunition, and we doubled our patrols and our listening posts and observation posts. And we didn't know, but there would be a war.
Now, before the wall was built, I mean, you were on border patrol. There were many other troops on border patrol.
Right,
you were looking for a Soviet buildup and threats to the West, but there were also a lot of people trying to move across that border.
Oh, yeah. The East Germany was bleeding its more or better trained people. They were losing their professional class.
Lots of defectors. How did you see that? How did you see people crossing the border?
In the area where we were, the only incident I remember had to do with a couple of border security police from East Germany. We drove into this town about 3 o'clock in the morning, and all these little German towns, lot of them were built in the Middle Ages, and they'd have a square, cobblestone square, and they'd have a fountain because there was no water in the houses. And these two soldiers were standing by the fountain with their submachine guns, and everybody panicked initially, and then when they saw us, they put their guns down and they raised their hand, and so that went off okay. And
you actually thought that this could be part of a buildup.
I think it happened. It happened so fast that nobody thought about anything other than the immediate situation. You know?
So those were two East German guards who were choosing to defect.
Together. Yeah.
And what happened to them?
We called our border operations. They called a force called Bundesgrenzschutz, which is Federal Border Defense. And these were a paramilitary organization that was allowed to the West Germans by the occupying forces so they could patrol their own border. And they came and I wouldn't even say arrested them, but they took them into custody. And they would be interrogated to see whether these people had been sent over rather than voluntarily fled. And then the people that escaped would usually be interrogated, and they'd be fed, they'd be clothed, they'd find jobs for them, and they'd be integrated into the West German economy.
Now, with all of these people fleeing East Germany, and particularly young professionals, I mean, it was a tremendous brain drain. Of course, that's what the Berlin Wall was built to stop.
Yes.
And of course, the border along the Iron Curtain was secured better because of that. More barbed wire, more patrols, more guard towers.
The East Germans had what we would call in the military defense in depth, kind of, so that the fences started 5 kilometers away from the border. And anybody who was caught within the 5-kilometer zone without permission to be there would be arrested. And their Stasi would check into them and see what their situation
was. That was the East German secret police.
Yeah. Did they? Yes, state security. They had anti-tank ditches, they had minefields, they had mines hanging from, later, not when I was there, they had mines hanging from the wire fences so that if you touched the fence, it would set off an anti-personnel mine and you would have been badly injured or killed. And the easiest place to cross the border became Berlin. I think in the early days, an awful lot of people crossed over the land border. But when I was there, not so much. And later, it became almost impossible for anybody to cross the land border.
When you were patrolling the border, I can imagine that although there was this constant threat, there was the tension and the worries about the possibility of World War III, it also sounds like you probably had some pretty long hours of boredom.
Yeah, you could say that part of the time. But I think to be on the border, just sitting there, was a lot different than just being somewhere else and just sitting there. While I was in the military, before the Vietnam War started, all military units in a peacetime army have a training mission. It's to prepare for war. The only units that had an active mission, I was told, was on the DMZ in Korea, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, Berlin, and us cavalry troopers along the border. We had a real mission because there was the danger of something happening. When I was there, it was reasonably quiet. The big stress was when they'd have these alerts and they'd say, well, you know, Khrushchev says if we don't pull out of Berlin, he's going to come in. And Kennedy says, well, if they attack West Berlin, we're going to cross that border. We're going to open up the highway between the West Zone and West Berlin. This is not going to happen. And, you know, then they go right up to the wire, midnight of such and such a day, and then nothing would happen. You know.
You write about a terrible incident that happened within your unit. It was somebody who you were friends with.
Right.
Who
right.
ended up shooting
yeah.
and killing another soldier
right.
in a very strange circumstance. Tell me what happened.
Well, the guy actually, he was a little older than me. He was probably, I was 17, he was probably 22, 23, and had been in the Army for a couple of hitches. He actually kind of befriended me, and it helps to have some older soldier, you know, give you the word, don't do this, do that, watch out for this person, and so on and so forth. And so we would go downtown and drink beer together, and we became pretty good friends. And the event that you're talking about happened while we were on the border, waiting to see what the Russians were going to do about Berlin in 1959. He carried a submachine gun as a personal weapon. He had just been on guard duty during the night. Now, actually, my first hearing about this was on the border, and I was on a listening post on the border, and this was the night of the deadline. And a call came through on the radio saying, send the man who was shot on the border to home station.
Oh, my.
Now, to me, the border was the actual fence, you know, the physical border.
You thought that the first shots of World War III had been fired.
I thought this was the beginning of it.
Right.
Yeah. I thought this was the beginning of it. And so did the guys with me. And but whoever was communicating on the radio included in the idea of border our bivouac, our lager where the tanks were and everything. So anyway, he had come off guard duty, and he walked up to the back end of the mortar personnel carrier. He was in the mortar section. And one of his buddies was sitting on a bench inside the mortar carrier. And at the time, they were playing this really stupid game where they would draw on each other. I mean, it was like there were a couple of seven-year-olds with cap pistols. They'd whip out their pistol or bring their rifle around and say, draw. And this friend of mine did that, and then he fired. And his weapon was still loaded, and I don't understand how that could ever have happened because the Army's very careful about gun safety. He should have been his weapon unloaded. I mean, we carried live ammo, but we didn't have a magazine in the weapon. He was shot three times in the chest, and he died shortly after that back to the post where our dispensary was.
And this was, you weren't given a lot of information about
this after
it happened. But
I didn't find out till the next day one story.
Now, Joe, you integrated into German society.
Yeah, yeah.
You met a woman. You ended up marrying
right.
a German woman, and you spoke fluent German. That also brought you into contact, you think, with people who had a relationship with the East German government.
Yeah, possibly. There was that time in Berlin where a buddy of mine, Kirikosian, and I, we'd go down some evenings during the week, and on the weekends we'd get a pass and go downtown Berlin. And so one night in a guest house, the Germans would talk to you. You know, they might ask you if you wanted to dance, or they might buy you a beer, or, you know, that sort of thing actually happened once in a while. And so we ended up sitting with this couple and becoming friendly with them. And on another evening, they invited us to their apartment, and, you know, and then they invited us to dinner. And so we became pretty good friends. And then one night they started asking about our barracks and asking about the kind of vehicles we had and asking questions that they probably could have gotten this out of a magazine or something. Not that this was really super sensitive material at all.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
but
secret.
Unusual questions.
But unusual questions. And we'd had a thorough briefing by military intelligence when we got to Berlin. I think we had a whole day of briefings by different military groups. And MI told us that 25% of the West Berlin population was spying for the East.
25%?
One out of four.
Wow.
So you can almost guarantee that you're going to meet somebody who's reporting to the East. And not all of these people were pro-East Germany. Some of them had relatives over there, and they'd be threatened. You know, if you don't spy for us, we'll put your grandmother in a concentration camp. I mean, you know, what do you do at that point? You know, you spy.
Right.
You know, so We reported these people the next day to MI, and they told us, stay away from them.
Now, of course, there are a lot of young people who consider this to be ancient history.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Berlin Wall came down, and this seems like such a very foreign past. But what about this period in history, this part of the Cold War? Do you think we should know? What do we need to know?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, I think we need to be very careful. I think that, for instance, what's going on in the Ukraine is scary because the Russians have the bomb. They've got tens of thousands of probably nuclear weapons. Do we want a nuclear war with Russia, who's not really threatening us? I mean, the Ukraine has traditionally been part of Russia, and that's kind of messy. I think we need to be a lot more careful than we are. And I personally think that our government is irresponsible to the American people getting into all these conflict situations. And personally, I think this is done because it makes money.
So
and it's a hard thing to say, but this is not the country I was born in. This is not the country I served in. This is not the kind of government I was working for, to my knowledge at least. That instead of trying to somehow, you know, come to some kind of amicable terms with Russia, we keep pushing them. And you're only going to push them so far. I mean, you know, if they feel threatened enough, then there'll be war, you know. And I don't think there's anything to mess with. Well, a lot of innocent people get killed. You know, it's just horrendous. I mean, nobody seems to think about the civilians, you know.
Joe, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Joe Michaud has written about his experiences patrolling the border between East and West Germany. His memoir is called Along the Iron Curtain, and coming up this Sunday, he'll be speaking at the German-American Heritage Center in Davenport at 2 p.m. as part of the center's exhibition, Berlin, Divided Past, United Future. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, talking about the birds and the bees with your kids and your partner. This is Talk of Iowa.
Fresh air.